listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 165 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin, and joining me for this discussion today is Chris, chief editor of the DIY Musician blog.
Hello.
How you doing?
I'm good. I don't know if you were about to plug my new album, but I guess I will. Today's the day that it takes its plunge into the world of commerce.
Well, happy release day. I thought this album came out 4 months ago. I'm totally kidding.
It's had about an 80-year ramp up.
You can't rush these things. You gotta time it just right. Now, the only reason why I was thinking, well, it's just coming out now, is because I sponsored your pledge campaign, and that wrapped up a while ago. And so now the album's finally out.
And also, just for your own peace of mind, I'm ordering t-shirts today. So the thing that you actually wanted from your pledge music campaign should be here soon.
All right. I will wear it proudly. Actually,
9 months later.
The album's great. The video's very cool. If anyone listening to the podcast hasn't checked out Chris's new video, it is very unique, shot in reverse. You had to learn the lyrics, how to sing the lyrics in reverse in a way that would make it look like you were singing forward, which yep. I found very interesting. And thank you for putting together the behind the scenes video. See, I didn't know that. And that made it even more interesting how you explained that.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And you know, I also, yesterday on the DIY Musician blog, I posted a 6 tips for people who want to make music videos with no budget. So it's kind of a little bit about my experience of making this particular video, but also things that I think would apply no matter what sort of video you're making. And I posted both the official video plus my behind the scenes video on that article.
Yeah, you should definitely check that out. It's very interesting. And I thought it was very timely with what OK Go did with their recent video, and how there was a very obvious uniqueness to it right when you're watching it, that you're kind of wanting to know, how did they do this? And I thought the same thing with your video when you're coming up out of the water singing correctly. People don't normally come out of the pool that way. So,
no, I'm just that special. I can defy gravity.
I knew you were special, but I just didn't know that you could do that. But anyway, yeah, I encourage everyone to check it out. It's great, and happy release day, Chris. I hope you sell a million copies.
Thank you. And if anyone wants to, you know, check it out, it is on CD Baby.
Of course it is. All right. Well, we've got lots to talk about today. The last episode of the podcast where we discussed is marketing destroying your music career. Got tons of feedback, lots of great comments. If you haven't listened to that episode yet, I encourage you to go back and listen to episode 164. Some great comments. Go check out the comments on the podcast website at cdbabypodcast.com. And good discussion. I knew that some people would get... a little probably irritated, but I don't know if that's the right word, but there's definitely people that are discussing both sides of it in a very civil way, and people have various viewpoints, and it's good. But lots of great discussion, so I encourage you to check that out. We'll be reading some of the comments and feedback and voicemails later on in this episode, so stick around for that. But first, Chris, last year we did our first ever DIY musician conference in Chicago, and the good news is we're doing it again in Chicago. How about that?
I'm thrilled. I'm excited.
You sound
Twitter
like
No, for real, I am.
It was
just my monotone voice, but I'm actually really psyched for it. I loved it.
It was an amazing time. We're doing it again this year, September 30th through October 2nd, same location in Chicago at the Congress Plaza Hotel. And the reason I bring this up is because the early bird pricing is coming to an end soon. Right now, it's just $69 for a ticket, gets you the whole weekend. Lots of great stuff. We're adding more things this year, including a jam room, an official jam room. That was one of our top requests. So go to DIYMusicianCon.com, pick up your tickets. We hope to see you there. It's been really important for us to, one, keep it affordable for artists. That's why we actually moved it up a few weeks because the hotel was going to be more expensive for rooms, and we wanted to pick a weekend where artists could save as much money as possible if they wanted to stay in the conference hotel. And two, we want to make sure it's actionable advice that's helping you move your career forward. And three, that it's a great opportunity to meet and network and just be amongst the independent artist community. And that was my favorite thing about last year. I've been to a lot of conferences where it's kind of like, it's kind of stuffy, people kind of putting up fronts. And then, but this was like just a wave of friendliness and community. It felt so different, and I can't wait to go back. So DIYMusicianCon.com, you can get your tickets, you can get your hotel room. Don't miss out on the early bird special. It ends later in March, and the price will jump up to $99. So save yourself $30.
And when we're saying we want to make it affordable, for people that don't go to music conferences, they might not have a frame of reference, but it is very affordable compared to other multi-day events, which can sometimes be about $500 or $1,000. So,
yeah, some of the conferences, like marketing conferences that I have my eye on to attend for work, will be like $1,600, and that's their early bird price. So $69 is really cheap for a conference. So DIYMusicianCon.com. Hope to see you there. Well, Chris, we have an abbreviated news section today because we just had so much happening in the comments and emails and voicemails that beyond our discussion that we're going to be talking about today about our exclusive blog Features Worth It. Beyond that, I wanted to spend plenty of time hearing from our listeners. So with that being said, let's get to the news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
Pandora recently announced a new tool to help artists connect with fans on the Pandora platform. It's called Ampcast. The new feature, which is available through Pandora's free artist marketing platform, or AMP, lets artists message their fans on the music service. A special Ampcast app lets the artist record audio messages on their mobile phone and target fans listening to their music on Pandora. This sounds like a nice development for Pandora, but it remains to be seen if fans will appreciate the voice messages and take action, or if they find them annoying and it ends up getting removed. Either way, it's great to see Pandora opening up the platform so artists can connect more to the people who are streaming their music there. Well, more rumors are circulating about the future of SoundCloud. Hot on the heels of hiring a new chief revenue officer, unidentified sources from inside the company are saying that SoundCloud will be a paid subscription service by October. Whether the rumors are true or not, we'll see soon, but when you hire a chief revenue officer, that can only mean that it's time for the service, which has been reported to be losing money fast, to make money. And when a service that is free has to make money, that definitely means change is on the way. So could be good, could be bad, we'll see. So just two quick news items, but I thought definitely something artists should be aware of. The Pandora thing I think is cool. I haven't heard a Pandora artist ad yet, or message, if you will.
I haven't either. I think it's really cool, you know, for, you know, if you're going through Cleveland and you want to say, hey, fans in Cleveland, here's this show, you know, you can leave a link to the ticketing site, or, you know, if you have a new release, you can pimp that through this thing. But the first thing I thought of when they announced it was about a month or two ago, the artist Father John Misty recorded a bunch of voice advertisements that were submitted to Pandora and presumably rejected, though I kind of think the whole thing was a publicity stunt. But that's the first thing I thought of. I was like, oh, you could leave like just really strange messages for your fans. It kind of they don't have a direct like marketing thing besides just like enhancing your brand. As I don't know, that was the first thing I thought of. So go look up those Father John Misty Pandora ads. They're hilarious.
Yeah, it does leave open some questions as far as like, do they approve these things? What happens when people start saying things that are just random and weird or inappropriate? So it's kind of curious to see how this develops. It's funny because they call the platform Artist Marketing Platform, or AMP. And right now it's really the artist data platform, because when you sign in, there's no marketing tools or anything. This would be the first, really. Most of it's data, which is great data, but it's not really a marketing platform. But if you are, if your music's on Pandora and you haven't created an account at the artist marketing platform AMP, you should do that immediately. There's great information in there. I think the web address is just amp.pandora.com. I could be wrong, but just search AMP and Pandora and it'll come right up. The interesting thing was, you know, for a while I was sort of indifferent to Pandora. I didn't mind it. I didn't really use it. I didn't think much about it as, you know, with our music and our music being Small Town Poets music. But then I got into the art, got connected to our AMP account, and at Christmas, between Thanksgiving and the New Year, you know, we have our most recent release is a Christmas record. We got over 500,000 spins on Pandora, and I would not have known that had I not looked in there. And, you know, that had some pushed some activity in other places, but it's good to know that that much activity was happening there and that, hey, something like this where I can communicate with those people might be really worthwhile. And one of the songs that we did that got a lot of traction was a cover song off our album, and it had over 300,000 views or listens. So it's cool to see that and be able to go, hey, this is now that they're making it where I can reach these people, I think the perception of what Pandora is and can be might change with some of the artist community who have had a unfavorable viewpoint of Pandora.
And it's free, right? I mean, they're announcing it as free. I haven't gotten in to try and use it because it's still in beta, but...
Yeah, they said it was free, so there'll be some rules. Yeah, it's brand new. I haven't had a chance to log in and try it either because, you know, like I said, most of our recent activities, a Christmas record, it'd be kind of weird to log in March and go, hey, check out our Christmas record.
July, though.
That's right, Christmas in July. That's a good idea. And SoundCloud, I have a feeling there'll be some big changes there this year. You know, rumors have been flying for a while that they want to become a full-fledged streaming service. It sounds like, you know, when you hire a chief revenue officer, which I didn't even know was a thing, that you're going to be making some big changes to get revenue. You know, they say they have over 170 million users, which makes them bigger than Apple Music and Spotify combined. Whether or not they can convert those to paying customers remains to be seen. But also, you know, what does that mean for the tools that they've supplied for independent artists? I mean, SoundCloud is built off of independent artists, especially artists in the hip-hop community and EDM community. That's really a big place for them. As if you listen to our episode a few weeks back where we had Booty Vogt on the podcast talking about promoting on SoundCloud, lots of EDM artists use that as their main distribution platform. So it'll be some change ahead. Hopefully they can keep the identity where it feels different and can be an artist-first platform. I think they're going to need the artist community to rally around them if they want to take on somebody like a Spotify.
Yeah, I found SoundCloud very useful for promoting my new record. You know, just the easy functionality of having songs up there that are privately accessible to bloggers and, you know, reviewers and whatnot was great. So I'm not sure if all of a sudden I had to pay for it, how that might change, but in terms of it being in its current state, it's great.
Yeah, so we'll see what happens. You know, things always change over time. We've gone through the era of free services, you know, have very clearly shown that you can't stay free forever, and that's just not sustainable. Unless, you know, even social networks, they all have to start running ads eventually.
Yeah, that's that thing about Facebook that my friend Rob is always pissed off. He said, you know, they threw the world's coolest party and it was free for years. And then basically once you set up your bed there and you were like, you know, had your car in the driveway, suddenly they were like, okay, it's going to be, you have to pay some rent now.
That's a good analogy. I like that.
Like, the party was so great that just, yeah, everyone just moved in and got comfortable. Gotcha. Then the landlord came around.
All right. Well, that wraps up the news. Today, we're going to be discussing the idea of our exclusive blog features worth it. And this is something that's been popping up a lot lately. I've seen other people chattering about this online, debating this question. And I thought it would be very appropriate since, Chris, you just did a whole bunch of blog features. And now that those have wrapped up and the album is officially out, that you can kind of lead us through your bullet points of, was it worth it? Was it not? Here's things to look out for, some suggestions, things you do differently. And that way we can all learn from your experiences and just feel better about ourselves.
Yeah. So maybe we should just start off defining what a blog exclusive is, or a premiere. You can do, you know, they're termed both ways. Basically what it is you give a particular media outlet like a blog a short window of time to be the only place where anyone can hear a particular track or see a video. And it's usually 24 to 48 hours. Past that point, you're kind of free to do whatever you want with your own music again. But for that exclusive period, they expect that you're sending your fans to that destination to hear the song or see the video. What you get in exchange for that is hopefully they're promoting it to their own followers and readers. Maybe they write a little intro or review or something, so that gives you some press. So that's the general idea. And a couple weeks ago when I was first talked to you about this idea, I was thinking like, you know, after I've done a bunch of these, I'm not sure if they're worth it, and I can get into why. But I had not had the two highest profile premieres happen yet. And now that those have happened, I'm a little bit more favorable. Okay. My opinion's more favorable. But I'll give you the pros and cons, I guess.
Well, first, before you get to that, set us up with how you went about getting these blog features and sort of just a general kind of what happened. Like, I had these blogs this time frame, because you did quite a few in succession. That's what it's kind of set that whole thing up, and then give us your points of the pros and cons.
Sure. Okay. So since it had been so long since I'd put out a record, I think it's been more than 5 years at this point.
You've got like 10 more albums waiting to come out.
I do. And they're all going to come out this year. No, maybe. But it's not like I'm out of the loop. I knew that blog premieres were like a thing and that they were cool. And that's how that's sort of how things happen now. But they weren't. Maybe they were happening in 2010 when I put out my last record, but it wasn't like ubiquitous, it wasn't this sort of mandatory thing to promote a record. So I just thought, I guess I should just try and do a bunch of these things. So I talked to my publicist, Alex, and he was like, yeah, we could do that. How many do you want to do? And I said, well, I don't know. Is it the more the better? And he kind of said, well, I'll shoot for like four or five. And I ended up lining up one on my own through a connection I have. So that was the very first one. The way he went about it as a publicist was to, work with me to figure out the best songs for, trying to kind of find out what the hits were in a way. And I have one song that's very kind of Americana, Nashville sounding. So he said, this is the obvious one to try and pitch to the Americana, bluegrass, country sort of websites. Another one was kind of indie pop rock kind of thing. Anyway, so he divvied them up by genre, and then he started at the absolute top of the food chain for blogs. So like maybe not Pitchfork, but something like of that, that stature. And he would kind of work his way down. They'd either ignore him or say no. He'd work his way down until someone expressed interest, and then he didn't always bite on the first time. He would kind of like, there was some back and forth, yeah, you're doing us a favor, but we're kind of doing you a favor too. So like, I don't exactly know what was in the negotiations, but I know that any time he'd had like two or three different blogs that were like vying for a song. And anyway, so that's kind of how it worked. He'd start at the top and work his way down. And then he had a couple, for one song, he had a couple blogs that were interested, but for some reason he wanted to try recontacting one that had already denied a song, and he did, and he realized that SoundCloud had some weird technical glitch that when he sent them the private link to the song, it was actually the wrong song.
Oh.
So just by luck and through his own you know, follow through and, squeaky wheel sort of thing. He said, hey, you know, I know you said no to this song, but, you know, check it out again. And by the way, here's the real, here's the actual song. And they were like, oh, that's awesome. We'll totally do that. And thank God, because that was the highest profile song premiere that happened on a site called The Bluegrass Situation. Anyways, so that was a little bit about the behind the scenes stuff.
How far in advance was he working that before they actually happened?
I think he started in early January, and the last scheduled one happened, I think, February 26th. So, you know, we started these discussions about 2.5 months in advance, and he started, yeah, I guess about 2 months ahead of the final premiere. Some of them he would line up, and it would happen a week later. So, you know, it's not like they all need that much, you know, setup time, but...
So in the last podcast, you were referencing one that you didn't want to name yet because you weren't sure it happened, but it did happen, and that was KCRW.
Yeah, they premiered the music video for my song Anonymous, which that's another thing I could mention, that you can premiere a song, and then, you know, when you make a video for that song, that's a whole separate premiere that you can do on a different outlet. So I'd already premiered the song, and then was it last week? I think it was last week.
Yeah,
the video premiered. And it was cool because, you know, on top of getting a bunch of views that I might not otherwise get by just sharing it to my existing fan base, they wrote a little bit of a, you know, blurb for it. And one of the quotes was something like, Chris Robley is at the top of his game with his new work or something. So, you know, right there, I'm like, oh, sweet. That's a really good press quote from KCRW, which is, you know, if people don't know, it's the NPR station in LA that broadcasts the, what's it called? Morning Becomes Eclectic show, which is a really cool radio show.
Yeah, they broadcast a lot of great music shows, and most of them are available in podcast form that are worth checking out. And probably 3/4 of their DJs are major music supervisors on TV and film shows there in LA too. So it's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, when I shared that with like on Facebook, people were like, "Oh my God, I love Morning Becomes Eclectic. That's so cool." So that one felt like, you know, that was definitely worth it, like, and very exciting for me. And I could, that one and the Bluegrass Situation, I definitely felt had a positive impact for a number of different reasons. But as some of the other ones, like, I don't want to name names, but just sort of like felt, do we want to get into this, the pros and cons at this point?
Yeah, now that we kind of have the whole thing, the table is set now. We understand what they are and the process that you went through and kind of how many you did. And so, yeah, I think now that we have the whole picture, let's hear the pros and cons.
Okay, so on some of the lesser... you know, ones with lesser stature. I don't know how you say it. There's kind of a lesser...
Smaller audiences.
I don't want to sound like sort of looking gift horse in the mouth attitude. You know, I'm super appreciative anytime someone wants to share my music. And but it kind of felt like it was just this like, okay, we'll take this, we'll do a premiere. And sometimes they'd publish the press release along with the song. There wasn't a whole lot of like personalized like... commentary from the editor, like, so I'm, you know, it's not like I had any sense that they actually loved my music. And so basically that kind of confirmed something I'd read a lot lately, where there's this one blog, what are they called, Indie Shuffle, where they said, you know what, we're no longer going to do blog premieres because it's turning into this just like frenzy that's meaningless. And like, basically blogs are taking songs that they're not psyched about just out of the hope that the fans of that band will come and, you know, look at their advertising on their own blog. And so it's just because it's just more noise. And it's kind of how I felt. It was like just another person slotted into this long string of songs of the day or songs of the week or whatever. That kind of led me to think, well, you know, if I'm only going to get, you know, 150 before I even say that, there's an artist who does really well, who said on a blog that he wrote, an article that he wrote, that he's been featured on some of the biggest blogs in the world, and that's only netted him about 300 to 2,000 plays, which isn't really even enough to generate much sales or excitement. So even when you're on Pitchfork or whatever, these premieres are not guaranteed to do much for you. So anyways, that being said, a lot of times on my kind of low-level premieres, it'd get about 100 hits, which is tracked through SoundCloud, because basically what they do is they take the SoundCloud embed of the song, and then you switch it from private to public on the day of the premiere, and you can track your listens that way. So anyways, if it's only going to be 100 people, how many of those were already the fans that I sent through Facebook and Twitter and my email newsletter to that place? I mean, probably, I don't know, 70, 80 of them were probably my existing fans. So I picked up some extra ones, you know, or extra listens, but really, why not just, you know, put that on my own website? Why not just house it on my own, you know, Facebook feed or whatever? Because you're not getting that much for the extra effort of sending people somewhere else. And then the other thing is, when you're sharing those things on Facebook, like, Facebook hates external links. So suddenly I'm having to link you to some blog you've never heard of to hear a song, and you might not even see the post because Facebook hates that stuff. And now I have to boost the post in order for you to see it. You know, so I'm spending a couple bucks every time there's a premiere that I want to get out there. It just becomes like more money than I'll ever generate back from that particular burst of interest in the song. So that was my first kind of like, I don't know if this is worth it. Related to that is that I think when you premiere a song, it's probably the most, you know, unless it becomes some giant hit, it's probably the most attention that that song is ever really going to get in a short period of time. So you're premiering these things, and the part of the premiere is that it's not available anywhere else. So no one can even buy it. So you're sending them to another blog to listen to your song that then they can do nothing with. Which seems really weird. I'm like, you know, why not just wait until the album is released? And then, sure, it won't be a premiere, but try to get some blogs that are interested in the music just to cover the music because they're just, you know, because they like it. And then if they put an embed code in there, they can go wherever they want, SoundCloud or Spotify. And I can actually capture a sale or a stream or something that, you know, has some kind of financial tangibility to it. So that part struck me as weird too, and I don't know, I didn't really think it through that much, but when you're doing 2 or 3 months worth of like advanced premieres building up to this thing, like, you're blowing a whole lot of sales opportunities in a way. I mean, yes, I guess you're also building momentum and hopefully interest, but I'm not sure how much that pans out on, you know, today when I'm actually releasing my record. Let's see, I've got more things to say, but did you have...
No, I think that what you said was the main thing that I saw other people talking about was that one, the blogs aren't using this. The blogs are just using this as a way to gain traffic for their own purposes, not because they're fans of music and want to, you know, curate the best in new music. But in a lot of cases, I won't say that's across the board, but that's the complaints I had seen artists saying that, you know, they're really not getting much for it other than the blog is getting some free marketing. And then,
yeah, right. Their ad revenue is being generated by your fans that you're sending to them.
And then the point that you brought up about that, you know, at that point, there's nothing that they can do because it's not available. That's what would give me pause about doing it, or at least an extended amount of time of blog premieres, because, you know, you get somebody there, like you said, you go through the trouble of they're not even getting it at your website. They have to go to another website, which, as you point out, Facebook does not feature those posts very prominently. You got to pay to boost it. So you're paying money to get people to the website to listen to it, where in the end they can't do anything about it. So that is problematic.
Yeah.
Not a deal killer necessarily, but problematic.
Yeah, and then there's this whole, you know, it's not super elaborate, but there's a bit of coordination that has to happen because basically most of the blogs want SoundCloud links. So you got your music on SoundCloud and the songs are marked as private. You give these people their private access to hear the song, and then when they can take that and embed it on their site, but when they do, you want to mark it as I think it's public or whatever the, you know, the sort of public checkboxes on SoundCloud, so that Hype Machine, which is this site that kind of like tallies up all the blog activity for MP3s and songs being played on blogs, they can tally it all up and figure out what's trending. So in order for you to you know, make your mark on Hype Machine, I'm pretty sure your things have to be marked as public, but you don't want to do that until the blog posts it. So there's this whole like back and forth of like, okay, when are you going to do it? What's the day? What time? And more often than not, you know, I would, my publicist would say, okay, they're going to post it at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And then it's 10 and it's 11 and it's 12. And I'm like, what the hell? Like, what's going on? So then I'd write him and he'd be like, oh, they just got busy posting other stuff. They're going to do it this afternoon. At which point you like have no target date. So then I, you know, I'm like, all right, well, I'm just going to do my work and wait to hear. So then at that point, like, you know, I'll hear back, posted your song, and I'll look and I'll be like, what was it 3 hours ago? Like, should I have marked it public by then? I don't know. There's just all that stuff.
Yeah.
I even had a blog premiere lined up this week for the entire album. So once I had individual songs premiere throughout the months, I was going to do yesterday a full album premiere a day ahead of the release. And that one got pushed back till today. Oh, no, actually, till last night. Which, you know, you're missing your window. And by that point, I'm already out doing my thing, you know, out for the night. I don't have time to sit in Facebook and write up a post and like really share it. So I'm not doing anything for them now that they've premiered it. And another blog wanted to do it too. So now they're going to do it on Monday, which is after the release. And it all just feels so arbitrary at that point.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's kind of some flaking that happens on both counts. You know, the bloggers are flaking because they're busy, and the bands are flaking because they're busy, and the coordination doesn't always line up as it should. A lot of times, like, blog will premiere a song, and then for whatever reason, the band doesn't even ever share it on Facebook. One of those happened to me where I was traveling to Oregon when it premiered, and I was on a plane, and then I was like checking into my hotel, and so I didn't even share it till like 3 days later, because at that point it was old news.
Yeah.
Like, so that's another thing that's kind of weird. But, you know, there is definitely good stuff that came out of it. So I don't know if we want to talk about that.
Yeah,
now
let's hear the pros, because I think we've loaded up on cons. So let's hear some pros.
Yeah, okay. So one is you get extra plays. You know, if you send, like, first, if I had 100 plays on a SoundCloud thing when it premiered, you know, a chunk of them are from my fans. But you are finding new listeners for sure. So that's an obvious benefit. It was really cool to give each song some real specific attention. Like, a lot of times they'll ask for you to write a blurb, you know, a paragraph or two about the song that they run with the premiere. And I liked having to go back and kind of find the story in the song. Could be about the recording or about the, you know, the inspiration for the song or whatever. But in doing so, I've been able to use that same copy, you know, if I wrote a couple paragraphs, for a bunch of other reasons. I can put them on my website. I have, you know, on Bandcamp, when you sign up your music, you can put little stories with each song, little notes about. So I've been able to use those for that, some other things. So basically you're just saving yourself some work, because you probably have use for this this content that you're generating. So you can kind of repurpose that. The other thing, I felt like it was kind of intangible, but I definitely felt as it went on was really gaining momentum, was it just kind of looks cool. Like, you're blasting out every week or two that some publication out there is premiering your song. And like, it feels like a news event, even if the person doesn't go and click to hear the song. After a couple months, like, I've had a lot of people come up and be like, wow, there's a lot of stuff happening with your album. That's so awesome. Like, they're excited because it feels like they should be, because, you know, there's been all these news events that you can kind of share. And now people are asking me, like, when's the release party? So, like, it's had that effect, which is good, kind of a cumulative excitement. And then, like, what I mentioned, the with KCRW, they had that quote that I've pulled and used in other contexts to just, you know, it's pretty exciting to have a good quote from KCRW about your new music. With the Bluegrass Situation premiere, a DJ in Nashville heard the song and put it on his show later that week, and then has been tweeting a bunch of stuff about my music, and we've kind of built a little relationship around that. And through our Twitter conversations, I reconnected with a studio owner in LA who's friends with this DJ, who then realized I had new music. And so it kind of had that effect too of like, you know, you're in a prominent place that this guy goes to find new music. He likes a song. Within a few days, it's on his radio show, which is, you know, broadcast all over through the internet. And yeah. And then I guess maybe my the last plus is that you have your story for Facebook, you know, or wherever, Twitter, like, hey, go here. Song is premiering. Check it out. That's one story. But then a few days later, when suddenly that song is now available to the public, it's not exclusive anymore, you can then go and reshare that SoundCloud link or the YouTube clip as its own new story where people can directly access it. So basically, it's just giving you more instances to get that music out there, which I thought was pretty cool too.
Yeah, to me, I think what you touched on there is what is most interesting about doing this to me. It's more about the broader story that you're telling. Regardless of whether or not people actually went to those blogs and listened to it, the thing that they're walking away is, wow, lots of people want to cover Chris's music. Lots of stuff's happening. People like KCRW, you got some great quotes. And even though it wasn't like being posted on KCRW opened up this tidal wave of fans, it made some nice connections and it's gotten you some plays. I'm sure there's some people that discovered your music that hadn't heard it before. But at the same time, it adds a really great story that you can use to get gigs, to just, it makes people go, oh, this release, there's a lot going on with it. I should pay attention when you're talking about it.
Yeah. And, you know, with the KCRW one, like, that definitely had, in terms of tracking hits or listens or anything, that definitely had the most impact, because it was a video where, you know, I know for a fact that most of the people who, of my existing fans that saw the video, saw it on Facebook. Maybe 100 or so of them went to check it out on KCRW's blog, which was an embedded YouTube player. But by the end of the premiere, it had about 500 views. And, you know, if only 100 or so of those were from my, you know, my fans, maybe 100 or 200, it still meant the 300 extra views happened. And, you know, it's not a ton of views, but it's more, way more than I would have had I just put the video up on Facebook and emailed it to my fans. So that felt pretty cool. And hopefully it'll, you know,
yeah,
get some legs and keep going.
Well, and plus next time, you know, it might be easier to get featured on KCRW. Now you've been featured at KCRW. So next time around, it's easier to start that conversation with them saying, hey, you featured his last release. So now you have your foot in the door, maybe for a bigger feature. So those are things to consider as well.
Yeah. And, my, you know, Alex, my publicist, basically said as soon as that got lined up, he was really excited. He said, you don't know, this will make it so much easier to get press for this album now. Because up until that point, there was, you know, decent, there was good press, but from, you know, like we said, sites with lower, with smaller audiences. So as soon as I have that quote from KCRW and that premiere, he's going to use that hopefully to line up reviews at the very least from higher profile places. So he was psyched about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It, you know what, this, the idea of blog premieres, when I was listening to you talk about it, especially the cons, when you got to the pros, was it reminded me of back in the day when Small Town Poets, when we were playing in Walmarts. And why it reminded me of that is because on the ground, it was a terribly humiliating experience.
Weren't you playing in a t-shirt aisle or something?
Oh, yes. I mean, we were playing in the men's section one time. Like, right, it was humiliating. There was one incident that happened that was just one of those, like, I could describe it, but it's just one of those you had to be there, where I just burst out laughing in the middle of a song. There was like one person standing there watching, and our road manager comes wheeling up on a motorized wheelchair, you know, like he doesn't know us, and kind of like trying to push his way through what we're doing. And so it, most of it was humiliating and made no difference on the ground there. But back in Nashville with the label community and the press, they just thought it was the most amazing thing. And the assumption of what was happening in their mind was enormous compared to what was actually happening when we were there. And so sometimes the broader story...
Were they envisioning like these giant crowds at Walmart just lined up for days to see you guys?
Well, there had been a bunch of country artists that had started doing that, and they would be like... So people in Nashville were like, oh, so-and-so did that, and they had like 1,000 people come out. And, you know, for us, I think once... We had maybe 5 people listening. It was, you know, it was great if we needed to pick up a toothbrush on the road. You know, say, kill 2 birds with 1 stone. We're here. Might as well get that toothbrush I needed. But the interesting thing is that sometimes the benefit is the broader story it tells. And what's actually happening on the ground doesn't seem like it's having a huge impact. And so that's something to consider. Is this, you know, the string of blog premieres you did individually, some of them you probably could have done without, but as a whole... Looking back, now that there's this kind of like bigger story, lots of blogs featured him, that could be something that has the ultimate value as opposed to just the number of people that stumbled across your music.
Yeah, I mean, I think my sort of final thought was that it is very difficult to say what effect any of this has. And given that I had a publicist, which made it very easy for me, you know, like I wasn't spending hours and hours every night writing to bloggers and trying to, you know, negotiate these things. But if I were, I think, you know, that's a lot of time to spend on something that has kind of intangible or you know, questionable effect. But I think if I were doing it myself, I would shoot for the really big players. You know, keep at it, try and get a, you know, medium to high profile premiere, and then maybe call it good after 1 or 2 of them. Maybe do 1 for a song and 1 for a video. And then whatever other time you might have spent writing to kind of blogs with low audiences, spend that on other things, you know, make another video or book a tour or something like. I didn't have to worry about that because I had the help, but I can imagine how much time he spent dealing with this. And I think if I had spent that same amount of time making a 2nd or 3rd music video, that would all of a sudden help me all that much more because those are, you know, more attractive. I think music videos are more attractive to blogs to premiere anyways. So that's my takeaway, I think, is concentrate on 1 or 2 of the biggest ones you can get and then call it good.
Yeah. And I think having some idea in mind of what the point of it is in general, what are you trying to get out of it? If it is a matter of getting a bunch of plays, then, you know, that should dictate your strategy. If it's a matter of, hey, this, I just need to get a wide shot of blogs just because I don't even really have any good press quotes, and any blog saying something about my music will help me get, you know, kind of to the next level of press placements or just help me get some gigs, then a wide scatter shot might be the way to go. So I think it's a matter of determining what you really want from it or what you need, what's going to help you move forward. And, you know, like I said, it may be that a lot of people will just think, oh, lots of stuff's happening, and that helps you move things to get the, you know, the people that do have a big lever to pull that can really open up the gate to fans to take you serious. So,
yeah. And then, you know, one of the confusing things that I think happens because of that, though, is, you know, for me, this is an album that's been in the works for a while. I've talked about it a lot. I did a Pledge Music thing starting last April, I think, which ended in June. Then there's been the make, you know, the sort of mastering and the album art. And then suddenly I do like a kind of teaser release week, and then there's all these press blog premieres. Like, so by what you said at the beginning of our conversation, didn't this come out months ago? It's kind of like, because so much has happened, I'm almost wondering if it starts having an opposite effect of like, wait, that album is just new? Like, it feels like it came out last year.
Well, it's all a part of the year of Chris. If you recall, I've declared this the year of Chris, so you got to keep it going the whole year.
Well, I have plenty of stuff in the can ready to come out, including a children's song.
See, there you go. There you go. See, after this is all done, you'll be able to write the best album release plan for the independent artist, because you'll have done it all.
After releasing four albums in 1 year.
Yeah, and then you can sit back and reflect and say what was good and what wasn't, what was worth it, what wasn't. No, but I think actually, I mean, you know, it is an album release. That's why, you know, in the old school industry, and it still exists today, that there's the album cycle. It's not referred to as much anymore because people release music differently. But, you know, when record stores were the thing and you needed to get records on the shelf and you needed to get the stores, convince the stores to keep the records on the shelf and not pull them after a month or two, you really had to keep a story going and have stuff to say that's happening, even beyond just that they're on tour. You know, it's like they need to know that people are going to be coming into the store and buying records. Otherwise, they're going to remove those records, send them back, and put something else in its place. So I think it is part of the cycle. I mean, the album release, and I think Benji from Pledge Music would agree, the release of your album started when you launched your Pledge campaign. And this is just part of the climax of the story, one climax of the story. And that's kind of how you have to look at it these days, that your fans have been along for the process. So it's the whole journey and not just, bam, out of nowhere, here's an album. We disappeared for 5 years and here's a new album and now you're going to hear about it. So that's my opinion. Yeah.
Well, maybe this year, now that I've done the long lead up release, maybe I should try the, hey, secret album, here it is, overnight, and then see how that goes for comparison's sake.
You should. You should, because you've got like four sitting there ready to go. And people think I'm exaggerating, but I'm not.
No, it's at this point, it's more like probably a total of two.
But there's that live album you recorded a couple weeks ago in Portland.
Oh, yeah. Well, that.
And that Harry Nilsson covers album.
Yep.
See?
These are all waiting for their moment to shine.
This is the year of Chris. You got to make it happen. All right. Well, I appreciate you taking us through that. I think that's very helpful. I know that that's one way that a lot of artists are seeing people release albums through blog premieres and have been wondering, is it worth it? A lot of discussion about it. So I thought you provided a very fair and balanced assessment of it that I think can help people better gauge whether or not it's worth the effort or how they should approach it or just having proper expectations. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I don't know if it was a little rambling, but, you know, I guess when you're conflicted about something, it's tough to make a succinct argument either way. But
I was on the edge of my seat the entire time.
Awesome.
All right. Well, we have so much feedback, comments, emails, voicemails. We won't even be able to get to them all. But we have a bunch of them, and I think they're great and love them. So let's get to them now. All right, Chris, let's get to some comments, some voicemails, and some emails. You ready?
I am ready.
There's a lot of them.
And as we're doing this, more comments are coming in.
That's true. We just looked, and since we started recording the podcast, like five more comments have come in. So definitely a hot topic. So let's get to the comments first. So people responding to the, is marketing destroying your music career? Now, clearly, as I said in the podcast, we are not anti-marketing. Clearly.
It is what we do professionally.
That's true. So what I think the interesting thing is, though, before we get to the comments, I will say that what the sad state of affairs is, that people, when they say marketing, they think social network. And that's absolutely a wrong. That goes back to the premise of what I spoke at about NAM, at the NAM conference in January, where I first started out saying, marketing is not sitting on Facebook all day, and it's not sitting on Twitter. It's not spamming all your fans. It's developing a compelling story. It's having something to say. It's developing yourself because you're the product. You got to develop that and build the story. And then those are particular channels you can use to get the message out. But if that's all you think about marketing, then you're missing a whole world of opportunity. I will say that. So Because there's some of the comments where they're like, they directly refer to marketing as only being about sitting on a social network, good or bad, but marketing is so much bigger.
And we may have set the conversation up for some of that, though.
Because, yes, we did.
You know, a lot of what we're talking about in terms of wasting time does involve social media. If you don't have the story that you're, you know,
Or you're not really marketing your music. You're just bogged down and looking at people's Twitter feeds.
Right.
And realize, hey, 2 hours just went by and I accomplished nothing. So first off, if you want to weigh in on this topic or the topic we discussed about blog previews, you can do so. Our listener line is 360-524-2209. We love getting feedback. You can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com, or you can leave a comment in the show notes at the podcast website, which is cdbabypodcast.com. And so we're going to start with some comments based off of the last episode. Let's see. This one is from Donna. Very disappointed in most of your advice. Yes, talent is important, but it is the product. An average product with a great business team will be more successful than a great musician with no or poor business team or knowledge. Too much time is wasted on social media, but social media, PR, and radio airplay is exposure. You need to truly market by bringing your target market to you. Use the AIDA sales marketing funnel. You convert interest into action, sales, awareness, interest, desire, action. So AIDA is awareness, interest, desire, action. True marketing is what is left out. Twitter, YouTube, Facebook is not marketing. It is only exposure. Disappointing. So her comment, I'm not quite sure I understand what she's disappointed with, because I thought that is exactly what we're saying, that true marketing is bigger than just Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, and I remember that you were talking about, even within CD Baby marketing campaigns, how we don't think of it like, what can we do on Twitter? What can we do on Facebook? What can we do by email? It's more like, what are we trying to accomplish? How are we going to go about it? What's the tone? What's the, you know, it's like basically, what's the story? And then once we know the story, we can think about the ways of telling that story, part of which includes deciding on the medium. But yeah, I guess I'm just saying, I think we already stated that, but
yeah. And with our marketing, we know what action we want people to take. And I think with music marketing, I think a lot of times people don't know what action they want them to take. And that's where the waste of time comes in. They're just throwing stuff out. Like, what are you hoping will happen? Well, I'm hoping I'll get signed and be on a label. I'm like, well, is that going to accomplish that goal? Or, you know, could there be better ways to go about using your time? So then Paul posted a comic. If you haven't seen it, you should go to the podcast website in the comment section. Check it out. And it shows someone sitting at their computer and their guitar is in the corner with a cobweb and a spider on it. And the person at the computer saying, wow, 27,543 followers. My music is really taking off. And
it's so true. That's I think that's a brilliant comic.
And, you know, you could have a lot of followers and your music could be taking off. But we see so many artists come through CD Baby that hyper-focus on follower count, then go buy bots to boost their follower count. So it becomes meaningless anyway. And the real thing is building relationships with fans and doing that with your music. So
And picking up the guitar every once in a while.
Yeah, yeah, that's helpful.
And dusting it off and writing a new song.
Because I guess the one thing that we didn't mention at any point in the podcast last time, and this is probably a good frame of reference, at CD Baby, we have over 450,000 artists using our services. We represent over 6.5 million tracks. That is a vast sea of humanity that is using our services. And so a lot of artists don't understand that some of our commentary isn't necessarily, maybe they are got this great thing on Twitter that's really driving their music forward, and it's really helping them reach the next level. We're not talking about that. We're talking about the people that they release a single, and then instead of going, you know, they get a couple people liking that song, and instead of building on that and developing themselves, they abandon everything to basically just try to, you know, pound social media for that song for sometimes years on end. I've literally seen that. So that's kind of the balance and the perspective that, you know, we're trying to strike here. We see so many different artists pursuing music in different ways at CD Baby that this is a very common thing that we see. People just sort of like do one thing and then wonder why nothing else is happening, but they sure bought a whole lot of Facebook likes, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, either they do the same thing that's not working for years on end, which is one form of insanity, or they adopt every new method so that they only stay with something for a week or two and never give anything the time to grow or get experience on the platform, whatever. And I guess that's another form of insanity.
Yeah. All right. Next comment, Dar says, the artist who I, and this is some of these comments, I will say some people left some really long comments. So some of them, I just pulled some highlights out of it. And this is one of them. For Dar, he left quite a few comments and some much longer thoughts, but I pulled this. The artist who I have known personally who found success had people help them with marketing, but more importantly, the artists themselves were workaholics and never stopped working to create content, be very present on social, and hustled hard looking for any opportunity that opened up. And I thought that was good. I agree. The one thing that I would take exception to in his comment is that actually, to what you were saying in the episode, I think, yes, anyone who's seen success, they are busting their backside and they're probably working nonstop. Now, I would say that a lot of the bands that I like that are seeing success are not very present on social. Not saying that's the case for everybody or the norm, but that's one thing I've noticed that, you know, the more success an artist sees, typically the less present they are on social media. That's what I've noticed. A lot of the bands that are bigger that I like, they hardly ever post anything.
Well, because they're too busy. They don't have any time. But I think that, yeah, also supports kind of the thought I had at Folk Alliance, which made me even think of this topic for the episode is, yes, all those bands are completely busting their ass, but it's in ways that are, you know, it's about playing gigs. It's about, you know, networking and building relationships. It's not about sitting in front of a computer screen for hours on end, you know. But absolutely, they're working their asses off. So,
and the reason why I partly wanted to include his comment, yes, that's true. They are. They're working really hard. And but that was one of the ones where I thought it was kind of equating as marketing as being that if you're not present on social, you can't be marketing your music. And I don't think that's what his intention was. But for those of our younger listeners in the audience, believe it or not, there was a day when the internet didn't exist. And in that time, it was very sad. No one knew what to do with themselves. But in that time is when our band, Small Town Poets, was signed, and we were busting our backsides constantly day and night. And there was no Twitter, there was no Facebook, there was no email. And what we did is all day long, day and night, is we did acoustic sets everywhere in the city that we were going to be playing at, whether it be the local record store, the distributor, the radio station that didn't even play our music but was happy to have us come on the air. That's how we busted our backside, and it had huge impact on our career because we were going out and meeting people personally and playing music for them. So I think that's one way when I say that people kind of go, oh, I got to bust my butt and it's got to be on social media. What I'm trying to say is there are so many ways where you can market your music, where you get your music in front of people and connect with them over the music that isn't just like, okay, I've got something I need to promote, so I guess I better learn how to use Twitter really well. Go out into the community, play music for people, the club booker, whoever, go stop by and say hi and play for them and play them a song. Do whatever you can, and there's that way you can hustle as well. That's how, that literally is what broke Small Town Poets wide open, because we went day in, day after doing that, and people over and over again said, no one's ever come and done this for us before, you know? And sometimes, you know, people can be in sort of a thankless job but still have some pretty big power as far as like what gets featured, and then the other thing is follow up with a thank you note. A lot of people don't even ever get thanked, and so many opportunities came our way just because we wrote people handwritten thank you notes. But moving on, go ahead.
And actually, to bring, you know, you're sort of talking about these things that occur in the real world, as opposed to online. I think thank you notes actually still have way more impact in the real world. Now it takes a lot more time to actually go get a card and write it and get your hand cramp after you've written 20 of them or whatever. But how much more fun is it to find a letter in the mailbox that's got your name on it that's from a band than like yet another email? Because these same people are getting hundreds of emails every day from bands.
Yep.
And but they're not getting letters.
And both Shannon Curtis and Chad Lawson, who were on the Artists That Breaking the Mold session at our conference, both of them sent me various thank you items afterwards. Shannon, a nice handwritten note. And Chad, I believe, sent me some chocolate. And I appreciated both of them. And I said, see, they know what's up. That's why they're seeing success. And that's why we had them at our conference.
Were you supposed to share the chocolate with other people?
I did not, because it was a small box that had four very nice pieces of chocolate. I did share them with my daughters because they looked like honeybees. It was a very nice box of chocolate. So,
a lot of times when people send chocolate to the CD Baby headquarters, it never makes it past the warehouse.
Yeah, there used to be something on our website that said, we like chocolate and feel free to send chocolate. And we used to get tons of it. And as the company grew, it never seemed to make it past that area. All right, moving on. Nathan says, with Instagram in particular nowadays, I find that if I tag a photo with a generic hashtag singer-songwriter or something, I get all these other artists liking the photo. So it just becomes a trading of artists liking other artists. Where does that get anyone? Needless to say, I enjoyed the podcast and wholeheartedly agree that time is better spent developing your craft versus becoming a marketing guru. And the one thing that I would say with Nathan's comment, while I agree with him, it is important to remember that other artists do like music. So if you have a community, like I've talked about on the podcast on Instagram, I follow a lot of artists. There's this Instagram feed called Ambient Tones, and it's people that have like spacey guitar sounds and stuff, and they feature a lot of artists' music. And I've actually discovered a lot of bands that they've featured, you know, just the guitar players playing something and have actually been listening to it on Spotify. So it does work. It's just, in that case, it's people that are community members want to hear what other people in the community are doing, and that is interesting. But yeah, if you're just using a lot of random hashtags and you're not like focusing in on a certain community, it can be kind of futile with the way the results.
Yeah, I think that is one of those things. It's sort of a gray area because, like you're saying, it's not that those other musicians are like empty numbers for your Instagram following or whatever. You know, they might actually have interest down the line, or you might be building a community. The other thing, though, is that even if it is just a community of musicians that are liking each other's stuff and, you know, building your following or whatever in just a purely numerical way, that can have an impact on people's perception of your music and of your music career. You know, like if I go and let's say I see you have 10,000 followers on Instagram, I don't know that half of them are musicians that found you through a hashtag. I just think, oh, this guy's got a lot of followers. I should check it out. So.
And I would say Gary Vaynerchuk, who is a big proponent of Twitter, he wrote a book called Crush It. He's not in the music industry, but if you want to read a good marketing book, that's a good one. I think what is interesting that he highlights and what I always find interesting about music and what keeps me excited about creating more music and just the catalog that I have that's out there is that you never know who's in your audience. It doesn't matter if you have 100 followers. You should treat them like, you know, the same as if you have 1,000 or 100,000, because you never know who's in that 100 followers. And it may be somebody very influential or people that are diehard fans, but they're just more lurking in the background. Lurking has kind of a negative connotation. I would say like hanging out in the background and enjoying what you're doing and things are happening, but they may not be going and leaving comments and, you know, wearing the number one fan foam finger on their hand for you. But you never know. That might be a music supervisor who's saw something, liked it, followed you, and then like they're like, oh, this is what I need. So that's the cool thing about the internet and why engaging on these platforms to some degree I think is worthwhile, even if you're not like all gung-ho about Twitter or Facebook or Instagram, that, you know, just getting content out there sometimes just has its benefits on its own. You know, it's not what you want to rely on, but that can happen. Well, those are the comments I had that I pulled from the website. There's lots more. I encourage you to go there and weigh in. check out the episode if you haven't already. It's episode number 164, the one right before this. And lots of good discussion, and it's great to be having these discussions on the podcast blog. All right, we've got some voicemails. Let's get to it.
Hey, guys. This is Charlie Cat from charliecat.com. I was looking for a show in your archives, and I could not find a specific one on the dangers of joining or applying for a show like The Voice or this new show that's coming out called Songland. Probably should not go on those shows because I keep hearing – every time I try to look into it, it looks good, it looks good. And then I suddenly read an article on the horrors of joining and how they take away all your rights, especially as a songwriter. So I figured if any podcast could really say a lot about the subject, it's you guys. I listen to you guys all the time. Love you guys. I learned a lot from your podcast. That's all I got. This is Charlie from charliecat.com. Take care. Bye.
All right. Well, thanks for the call, Charlie. There was just an interesting article about that show he mentioned.
Pertaining to The Voice, I saw one. Is that the one you're talking about?
No, there was one about that new one that's related to songs and songwriters. Or maybe it was The Voice.
I thought it was The Voice. Maybe I think that because it was a picture of Adam Levine whenever I saw that article being shared.
Yeah, I think that's what was confusing about. They used an image from The Voice, but they were talking about this other show that he just mentioned that is about songs and songwriters. Because The Voice, you're singing cover songs. Yes, those shows are pretty terrible for your career. Notice how hardly anyone from American Idol has sustained a career. There has been a couple, yes, Carrie Underwood and the original person, I forget her name, but you figure all those shows, all the seasons of American Idol. And there's like two memorable. It's like you're an artist in front of this massive, massive audience, the biggest TV show on TV, and you just disappear. You can't even manage to scrape together some fans to keep going. Now, granted, I'm sure there are some that are still going, but it's like a big step down. And part of it is because they lock in all your rights to be able to make records, and some of them just haven't been able to. And so it becomes a pretty terrible process. And if you don't see success immediately following, it can be pretty damaging to your career and hard to pick up the pieces because you can't do anything without Fox or whoever owns the rights.
Right. All your hands are tied. And
yeah.
The other thing is you're expected to kind of continue to do exactly that thing that you've become known for. Like if you decide, oh, I got known for this country thing, but I really want to go in a dance pop direction. Like those people that control your rights are going to be like, nope.
Yeah, what was the guy, Philip, I forget his, he won a couple years ago, and the song he sung to win, they put on the record and they played it to death, and then it was on a insurance commercial that got played, I think, just as much as the song on the radio, and he hated that song. He had a bunch of original songs he wanted to do, but they made him do that song on tour and cater to that song. So anyway, there can be that. But also this new songwriting one, the article I read was saying that they're basically locking in your songwriting rights like crazy overboard that I would never sign unless, yeah. I mean, because it said even if you submit a song for this contest, they basically instantly own the rights and even the writer portion, and that they could potentially own future songs even if you don't make the show. So that's...
Oh, my God.
It was.
They own the writer share.
That's what this article was saying, and they had the contract there. I didn't actually read the whole contract, but basically they were saying what the show probably did was just their lawyers wrote something that said, you know, they said write us a contract that makes sure our butts are covered no matter what situation comes up. And they're like, yeah, here you go. Screw that person. That's how you're going to
talk about overkill.
Yeah, so that I would be very careful. You know, those shows can be great and they can build a career, but the chances of getting picked are so slim. And it's like, do you really want to give up your best song to these people in order to just steal everything from you? Probably not. So that's what I've heard about that. Let's go on to the next call.
Hey, guys. It's Zach here with Bipolar Beats. You know, one thing that I've always heard, and it's that whole story thing. And, you know, listening to the broadcast or your podcast, sorry, it gets played over and over and over and over. And I think that it's one thing that artists should never forget. You know, I started out making these beats and my whole thing was thready beats. And, you know, I had like 1,000 followers on SoundCloud and like, you know, just some other stuff. I had my website up, Thready Beats. And, you know, eventually I thought about the whole story thing and I decided to completely rebrand my image. I changed everything. I bought bipolarmusic.com, bipolarbeats.com. I registered Bipolar Music LLC. Really, my whole story surrounds being bipolar, and that's why I make music. And I feel that just listening to your guys' podcast really kind of made me think about that a lot. And I just want to let you guys know, thank you, and keep doing the good work, guys. All right, bye.
All right, thank you for that call, Zach. I appreciated that call. He's opening up, letting everybody know that he's bipolar, and that's something that's a part of who he is. And so instead of running away from that story, he's leaning into it, and it's a part of why he does music, and it's a part of who he is, and I appreciated that call.
Yeah, well, one thing I found, you know, normally you think of like, oh, we're thinking of rebranding. Like, that usually means like you're just putting a facelift on something, you know, or like, but in his case, like rebranding meant becoming more authentic or, you know, closer to what really motivates him creatively. And I think it's cool that rebranding involved like going deeper.
Well, I think
deeper into something that was already true for him and very important in his life, obviously.
Yeah. And I think if it goes all the way back to like one of our first episodes with Lisa Lapine, and she talks about, you know, this is why we talk about it a lot on the podcast, because this podcast really started in that place. And that most of what she's saying about your story is exactly what he's talking about. He's like looking inward, not going, who do I want to be? Or, you know, she does talk about personas and what kind of persona you have, but really basing it off of who are you in that place of authenticity. And I think that's really important. And I think, you know, that story right there is a way for him to connect with people that people are going to be like, oh, okay, now I'm kind of curious what he's doing, because I understand maybe a little bit of his struggle or whatever he deals with on a human level. And now there's a broader context to the music.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of a video that I posted yesterday on the DIY Musician blog, which is with Amy Mann, the singer songwriter, where she's talking about how with age, she feels like her writing has improved so much. And, you know, the reason she gives is because basically, she just doesn't give a shit anymore. And when you're young, you spend so much of your time wanting to fit into something that you look around you for all the cues of what your music should sound like and what you should look like and how you should be. And basically you're trying to create things that will get approval based on this sort of perception of what's already out there and what's cool. So as you know, in her case, it was sort of becoming older, maybe in, his case, it's becoming just truer to himself. But like, as you do that, you start to shed that part of you that wants to please other people. And then I think everything about you and your music has the potential to become way more interesting and valuable.
Agreed. All right. We've got one more call. Then we're going to get to emails. And here it is.
Hey, how you doing, Kevin? Good to be a part of the show. I just wanted to find out. I'm an artist, baby boy, U2DK Productions. Wanted to find out about... I've been a CD Baby artist for a good amount of time, and I wanted to find out if you knew anything about how the YouTube sync goes, where you can actually find out what video your song may have been placed to, because I'm seeing that I'm getting a lot of plays as far as YouTube syncs, which is good for my CD Baby account, but I can't track down the video that it's on, so... If you could give me any update on any of that, I definitely appreciate that. That's basically my question. All right. Thanks.
All right. Thanks for that call. If you email us, we could probably give you some URL some links. That's something we'll probably make available in CD Baby accounts at some point. Maybe, maybe not. It might cause more confusion than it's worth. I know some, in full disclosure, because we're among friends here, there are some companies that's all they do is, you know, YouTube monetization for artists, that they do show some of the videos that your music is in. They'll show you some links to it. That doesn't necessarily mean that's all of them that's out there. And, you know, sometimes I think it can be, I don't know. It's weird. I've found some of the videos that are using an older band's music, and there's this manufacturing company in Asia somewhere. They used an instrumental version of our track on all their little demos of their machinery, so that they send to prospective clients about, hey, we can manufacture this stuff for you. And it's just our song running. There's no voiceover or anything. It's just kind of humorous. So it can be very random, and it can be all over the map. But if you email us, we can track down like the main ones for you if you'd like. So that's the calls.
We got through the calls. We got through comments. Anything else?
We got some emails, and I'm going to get to them right now. Let's see. Yeah, the emails, we can move through the emails pretty quickly, but there was so many of them. It was great to hear from her, but I don't want to get in as many as possible. So Marvin wrote, hey, Kevin, and all the people working on this podcast. That'd be you, Chris. Huh. I'm all the way from Amsterdam, and I just found out about this podcast 2 weeks ago, and I just want to say that I love the podcast. I was already driven, and since lately I've been functioning as the manager of my band. It's pretty hard, but with the information I'm learning through this podcast, I feel like I'm unstoppable. I still need to learn to do a lot to do, but this podcast inspires me in a way you will never believe. The people, the questions, the roundtables, I just love it all. I'm forever grateful for you making this podcast. Greetings, Marvin. Well, thank you, Marvin. We made him unstoppable.
Unstoppable. We expect big things now.
The emphasis was my own, but I'm sure he meant it.
That's awesome.
Thanks, Marvin. Yeah, great to have you listening to the podcast, and all the way from Amsterdam. There is a direct flight from Portland to Amsterdam, so if you ever want to come visit. All right, next email. I believe this is your friend, Chris James, JP. You mentioned him at Folk Alliance.
Oh, yeah. Yep, that's where I met him.
So he emailed me twice. So this is kind of a combination of a piece of both emails. Basically, he was responding about marketing and was saying he was going to test some Facebook ads for a show coming up. And then I said, well, hey, let me know how it goes. So this is some pieces from both of those emails, just for because it makes sense when both sides of the story are there. So he says, you're right about the dangers of getting wrapped up in digital marketing nonsense. Most of my Twitter followers are people or companies that want to sell me stuff. And Facebook used to be a better vehicle for letting people know about shows and getting them out to see you. Not so much anymore. That being said, just this week, I did try out a Facebook ad for the first time. I've spent about $15 and have reached almost 1,000 people. We will see tonight if it makes any difference at tonight's show. So that's when I responded, you know, wanting more information about how it went. It was the week of the show, and I set a limit of $20 for my ad. For this, I got a total of 1,152 people and 1,522 impressions, which I assume means some people saw the ad multiple times. Did it get people out to the show? I can't be sure. That's the one thing the analytics can't tell you. The place I was playing was a pretty good built-in crowd, and I don't know who all saw the ad. It did get me a few more page views and likes, and more people were asking me how the show went in the days after. Back when I was in college, before the internet, I would create posters for my gigs and pay for copies at Kinko's and put them up all over campus. There was no way to tell how effective the posters were, but I still did it. I see this as modern equivalent. I can put digital posters up where people will presumably be on Facebook. It creates awareness, which may take some time and repeating to show tangible results. Strangely enough, my credit card is yet to be charged for the ad. When placing the ad, there was an account listed with my name and a very large number with USD next to it. I was not sure what that meant. Were they giving me that much in free advertising to get me started doing it? I still had to put my credit card info in and place the ad, but so far I've not been charged. So, you know, he can't tell if he really got much results from it, but I kind of agree that it is sort of like the digital poster. I included the part about the credit card just to let people know that I believe Facebook charges weekly. They don't charge every day. But also, when you do sign up for ads for the first time, if you've never done it before in your account, sometimes they do give you some free starter cash. And sometimes there's some links. You can probably do some search online to find an offer from Facebook out there to like $50 of free advertising or something. A lot of them do that. So I think Facebook might do 20, but you might find that out there. So that could be also the possibility, but it's interesting. You know, if you're listening and you've had some good results from Facebook ads, I'd love to hear your results as well. Ron said, I wanted to say thank you for the DIY podcast, in particular the episode with Josh Colum. A tweet of Facebook like are always nice, but I wanted to tell you how much it can impact someone that you may not be aware of. I appreciate the straightforward approach and being candid about being ready for whatever you're chasing in the music business and properly using the tools that are available in this amazing time of technology. Appreciate my CD baby people. Thanks, Ron. We appreciate you. And the last one we have, Stevie Z. He says, hey guys, I know the individual songs versus albums debate has been going on for years, but I think that as a CD Baby customer, it's something that my tiny, inconsequential music label has to make a decision on, and hopefully you guys can help. Here's the problem. I've heard more than a couple of industry experts say that by releasing songs individually, it gives you more things to promote more often, i.e. instead of one album per year to talk about, you can release 12 singles over the same year and have 12 more things to promote. That makes complete sense. The problem is it would cost me a lot more money to release 12 individual tracks through CD Baby than it would for one album, especially if I'm using the pro level for releases. Is there a way to mitigate the cost of releasing singles, or should I do an album and upload them, promote them singles from it the way the industry used to do with albums? Thanks for the great podcast and CD Baby service, guys. I have a lot of thoughts about the singles versus albums. I wouldn't necessarily buy into that you have to release singles. In fact, I would say that that's not the... I wouldn't do it because someone says you should do it.
Yeah, well, I agree with you in that sense. And albums are more fun to make, and it's this bigger cohesive statement. I know that's your thing. It feels more like part of a story, and it's a document of where you're at in your creative life. I did just watch a seminar, and geez, I'm forgetting the guy's name now, but he's talks a lot about Spotify. And it was basically his analysis of how what performs well right now is singles. And that's our impression of what it is now. But he goes back through history. And he's like, it's actually always been this way. And if that's the case, then why not give people what they want, which is a single, as opposed to the full album? I thought, you know, that makes some sense. Like, it's more manageable as you go.
Here's where I would push back. I think what people ultimately end up consuming is a single, but that's not how they get there necessarily. We're going to do a whole episode on this now.
Because, yeah, I get what you mean, because it's the album that makes the impact, which gets the single the attention it has.
Yeah, right? I mean, and I see his point as well, because yeah, you look back through time, back when like bands like in the 60s and 50s and everything was just a single and it'd have a B-side. And a band would go out on a label tour and they'd get to play two songs for, you know, entire half year playing that tour. And then they might release another single with another B-side. And then, you know, albums grew as the ability to make larger records that worked, you know. But we'll have a discussion about it.
All right. I'll save my thoughts for that.
Maybe we'll defend the opposite side, of which we really do believe, like they make people do in debate in high school.
Oh, yeah, we should totally do that. We'll have to do a little research. And
yeah, and then I'll say why my angle will be like, why releasing singles is the only way ever. And all right, cool. Well, thank you so much for all that feedback. And we just love it. It was fun interacting with people on the blog and playing your voicemails. And I know we didn't get to all of them. So keep calling in. We'll get you on the show. And the number is 360-524-2209. Email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And, you know, the show notes are over at cdbabypodcast.com where you can comment. And don't forget to subscribe in iTunes and your favorite podcatcher app so you don't miss an episode. And, you know, if you're new to the podcast, this is 165. There's 164 more before this one. You can go back and binge listen. And yeah, so you can see how the podcast progressed over time.
You know, well, before we go, I was going to say, it might have been Jim. I forget who it was. Someone recently that was a listener of the podcast and had binge listened. And I said, oh, man, I'm ashamed to go back and listen to those early episodes and see what sort of opinions we had that have been proven 8 years later to be completely ridiculous. And he said, you know, it's not that bad. I was like, oh, that still sounds pretty bad. He's like, no. He's like, really, like, almost all your advice is great. So anyways, it made me feel better about that. But
I actually go back and listen to some of the interviews that I've done just when I'm trying to get to an idea or get inspired again, like some of the interviews I've. That's partly why I do this podcast, because I learn stuff and get inspired. All right, Chris, I think that's going to do it. We made it to the end, and go enjoy the rest of your release day. And everyone else, right. Go buy Chris's music.
Yeah, everyone else, please enjoy my release day, too.
Yeah, please enjoy his release day. So, all right, well, that's going to do it. See ya.
See ya.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.